well. And I mentioned that this week we're going to be getting into several different solutions. And the solutions might not be what you typically think, because I mentioned last week, whenever we think about technology causing problems, we typically think of other technology that can help fix the problems that technology has caused. We just add more and more technology to try to fix our problems. And so the solutions that I'm going to be talking about today, while there is a place for some technological solutions, most of the solutions I'm going to be talking about today are to straightforward discipleship, communication, and passing on instruction, setting an example to others. And so there's no single solution that you can just say, hey, get this device and attach it to your network at home, or get this software and put it on your computer or on your tablet, and then you're good. You're now parenting successfully in the digital age. So none of that is going to solve all the problems that the technology creates and the challenges that are before us. One thing we need to recognize, just beyond that there's no single solution or no technological solution, is that technology is always changing. And so whatever our solution is, we need to reconcile that with the fact that things are changing. So if you install a piece of software on your computer, well you know that in a few months that's going to be obsolete. That there's going to be some new social media site that's going to pop up that is going to take the world by storm. And you know, so now there's platforms like X or Facebook or Instagram, but then there's a whole plethora of others that maybe the younger generation is using. And so you can never quite keep up. And as I've done some research for this about how to navigate the digital age, the instructions are always, parents, you need to be on top of all the different platforms that are out there. And that might be a task that's just insurmountable, to be familiar with everything that's out there. There's just so much that is out there. I grew up in an age where, it was before the dawn of the internet, where you would use your modem to attach to a bulletin board system, and then you would download things through that. And it was older technology, and my parents did not know that. They're not really updated on the current technology too. And so we're always chasing the latest technology. So being experts on all the different websites or bits of technology out there is a task that is typically beyond our reach as parents. Okay, so our solutions need to deal with not the technology itself, but the heart issues and the issues underneath it. And so if we are cognizant of the dangers that I went through last week, and remember that our task as Christian parents is to pass on the Christian faith, our task as Christian parents is to raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to love what is beautiful and true and good, and then to flee from and turn that which is evil. That is our goal. And then our children can then navigate as they get older and grow in maturity. They can navigate some of the technology that is out there themselves. And so this is about an impartation of a Christian world and life view for our children. So now as I think about practical solutions, I want to get to practical solutions here this morning. And so I have several leads. I haven't counted them to know how many of them, but I'll just start with number one. First, the solution to the technology problem is communication, face-to-face communication with your children. That the home should be a home where there's much speaking, much conversation, and that conversation involves the use of technology, the devices at home, the internet, how that's used. And so we need to be making our children aware of the why we would use our technology this way and not this way, and why we would not advise to go there, or why you can't have an account there or go to that website, whatever it might be. It's important that we're persuasive and we're teaching the why, not just the you need to do this because I say so. So they don't really have an understanding of why it is that you're seeking to navigate technology in the way that you do. We need to understand, as I mentioned, the problems last week, problems of identity and social dysfunction when it comes to just an overindulgence in the technology and how it's reshaping our minds and our relationships, that your children will grow up and they will question issues of identity. You know, as they grow into a young man or a young woman, what does it mean to be a man or a woman? As they go through puberty. What does that mean? And so if we're not teaching through with our words through these stages of life, well, then they'll probably turn to technology or to friends, and they'll be receiving this instruction and rather than receiving it from you. So we need to make sure that we're providing biblical teaching in these areas before our kids are steeped or taught or catechized by devices or the internet. We must talk about how to use the internet properly as a tool. Must use it in light of the Bible's teaching, not to say, well, we need to be like the Amish and just completely get rid of technology because it's bad, but how to properly navigate. Must walk our kids through that. And so it involves much speaking. And that's from the youngest ages all the way up. There's a book that we've used for our youngest children, and it's very simply called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. It's a picture book. And it's a picture book that just talks about, you know, some of the pictures that kids might be exposed to. And then what do you do when you see a bad picture? And you stop. You don't look at it. You go tell mom and dad. And so it's a very helpful book to teach at a young age. And then as children continue to grow, you continue to have these conversations about the things that are out there. Just last night, we were sitting around talking about the use of technology. And it wasn't necessarily prompted by what I was teaching here, but just how the kids had signed up for something or some little game that they had played, and they had gone recently even to SAIT to do like a small little course there, and so to tell our kids about fishing, you know. So we think of fishing reel and rod, you know, look for fish in the river, but fishing is also another term used in technology. It starts with a PH, fishing. And it refers to people who are trying to get information from you. And so when you get an email saying, hey, you just want a trip to Las Vegas, you want a trip to Florida, all you have to do is just call back this number. You know, you get texts, you get calls. These are all phishing schemes to try to get you to give your information to them or to give your credit card, or it might be identity theft. And so we have to talk to our children about that, the dangers of phishing and identity theft, how to properly use email or messaging. You know, you shouldn't give your if it's not someone that you know, or it's a direct communication, then be cautious about sharing personal information, addresses, things like that. And so we need to be mindful of instructing our kids to properly use technology in a safe way, so they're not brought to a point where they're open to abuse. So conversation is the biggest solution to our technological challenges. Many conversations with your children. And that's going to come through my other solutions as well. Okay, that's the first big one. Have lots of conversations with your children about all the things that are happening on devices and the internet around us. The second thing I'll mention here in terms of solution is an important one, I believe. And this one is the realization that the internet is not a need. The internet is not a need. No one has ever died from a lack of internet usage. Okay, so it's just not a need. It's not something that you do need. Although we live in a world where we might think we need that, and our children need that, and we always must be on the internet 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. But the internet is not a need. It's a tool. It can be a resource. It can be helpful, but it's not a need. We don't need to either be at home or have devices that have access to the internet 24/7. And we don't need to give that to our children, even if they say, hey, I need this. No, you don't actually need it. And so there needs to be times in our life where it's right and healthy for us to be apart from our devices and be apart from the internet and not have it, you know, always beeping and chiming, whatever it is, buzzing to get our attention away from the things that are happening right before us. Okay, so the internet is not a need. We need to remember that as parents. The second thing we need to remember too, very similar to the last one, is that devices are not a need. Okay, devices are not a need. So the internet's not a need and devices are not a need. And I know every parent is probably going to hear sometime another, mom, dad, I need a cell phone. You know, I need a smartphone. I need this new iPhone. I need this new Samsung. I need this iPod. I need this. I need this laptop. I need it. And you don't actually need devices. It's not a need. And it's important for us as parents to remember that we are parents, that there is authority that we exercise. There are parents who can get to the point where they complain that their children are on their devices too much, and whether it's put this on the internet or on this chat or watching videos or playing video games, and they're just on it too much. But it's the parents who have actually given that to them. And so we must realize that we need to exercise some authority. And it might be difficult to claw back what we have been permissive in giving, but it's important that we exercise authority, have fortitude, and recognize that devices are not a need. I mentioned last week how Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, co-founder of Apple and founder and developer of the original iPhone and iPod and iPad, that he wouldn't let his children use devices on evenings and weekends. In other words, they weren't to be toys. And so he gave it several reasons for this, and so I want to give those reasons for you here today. And so he said that there's a lack of creativity as children rely on technology for answers and are lost when technology is unavailable. Okay, so that's what he saw. And this was the dawning of the the iPhone. This is more than 10 years ago. And society has changed much since then. And so he didn't want his children using it because of a lack of creativity. They would just rely on technology for answers, and they would be lost when technology is unavailable. And I think we see those dangers come to fruition today. You can probably think of this happening already. Secondly, he said, there's a lack of curiosity and passion for learning because children rely on technology for their answers. He said learning was a process and not a search result. You know, you can have someone, you know, go on YouTube and watch 10 hours of woodworking videos and think, wow, I'm an expert now. I've seen all these videos. And then you bring them into a shop and they you know, have a hard time maybe putting things together, where you take someone 10 hours, you know, with an instructor and using the tools themselves, that they'd be much better off. Okay, so there's still an advantage of having videos and resources for tutorials and such, but there can be a lack of curiosity and a lack of learning if we rely on technology for answers rather than going through the process of learning. And so Steve Jobs recognized that. He also said, thirdly, there's a lack of patience that develops in children since everything is on demand and parents are too easy to cater. And so it actually creates this now mentality. I need it now. And so he saw technology doing that, and so he didn't want that in his children, a lack of patience. And I don't think patience is a virtue in our culture, that our technology has not aided us in this, rather it's hurt us in the attitude of patience. Four, he cited a lack of exercise as children are on devices, and so he'd much rather them go play outside, play with a stick, throw a ball, get more exercise. Five, he also noted decreased test scores. Studies show when schools ban phones and other devices, test scores go up dramatically. You know, I wonder why. So that they're not helping our studies. And then he also mentioned a lack of human connection. Number six, lack of human connection. So for these reasons, he said, you don't need a device. You don't need to use one. And so I think it's important for us to recognize that devices are not a need. You know, if your children grow up and they're 17, 18 years old and they haven't had an iPhone for the last 5 years, that's okay. They don't need that. Devices are not a need. In fact, in so many other respects, they might be beyond their contemporaries or their peers who've been using a phone for the last 5 years. But they might be more up to date on the latest technologies and fads. But in terms of some of those key skills that will lead to the productivity and being an influence for the coming generation, those who haven't been relying on technology and haven't had that all in their life will be much better off, in my opinion. Okay, so internet is not a need. Devices are not a need. So kids know that. When you say, Dad, I need this. No, you don't need it. You won't die if you don't have a device. The next point I want to mention, point number four. Digital privacy is not a need. Okay, digital privacy is not a need. So my point so far, loss of communication, in person, face-to-face, conversation, not just laying down the law, but conversation, persuasion. The internet is not a need. Devices are not a need. Privacy is not a need. There's much danger that can take place whenever Everyone has their own device, and it's very, very private, and it's very personal. Sin needs privacy. Sin needs darkness. Sin needs alone time. That's when sin is cultivated within us. Sin has a hard time when our lives are brought out into the light, when there's accountability, when there's a lack of privacy. That's when sin has a hard time getting root in our lives. And I think this is not just important for our children, but even for husband and wife. It's important for husband and wife that our devices can be used and shared and seen by each other in a marriage relationship. There should be nothing on my iPad or on my phone that if my wife picks it up and looks at it that she's going to be scandalized. Like, what are you doing here? That should be fully accessible to her and vice versa. And so we don't need privacy on our devices. They should be open in that relationship of accountability in a marriage and in a family. I recommend that any devices that our children are using are in a place in the home that is fully accessible and visible to parents and to others. And so if they're on a computer that's at the kitchen table or another table where everyone can see what is going on, there should be no devices, screens or things like that in bedrooms, period. Even if they're going to watch a movie, it's just we don't make any exceptions for that. No devices in the bathroom. No TVs or Kindles that have internet on, iPads, iPods, anything like that. Gaming consoles, anything that can connect to the internet, you need to be mindful of how that can be used for ill and not for good. And in our family too, this goes beyond technology, but I'm convinced that privacy as it pertains to digital devices, it attains to more than just your devices, but it attains to your whole life. And so it's my conviction, you know, we have 9 children, so they have to share rooms. But even if we had 2, I would put them in the same room. And part of that is because there's that greater accountability and lack of privacy and time that can breed sin and temptation to sin. And so it's my goal that as our children grow up, they always have a roommate as they grow up. And then when they get married, they have a roommate again. And they just always have someone in the bedroom, in the room that they're with, knowing that sin needs space, darkness, privacy, and secrets to grow and to flourish. Okay, so I take that truth and apply it to technology. So your digital privacy is not a need. All right. So if your child has a device, that device should be fully accessible to you and others in the household, and you know there's no need for any kind of privacy for our children when it comes to the digital any kind of device or anything on the internet. All right. A few other points that I would mention here. Another point I'd mention is be cautious of screen time and how screen time is managed. I know we have that word screen time that we use now, and we can use screen time as a carrot and a stick in the lives of our children. Okay, so hey, if you do good here, little Billy, then I'll let you watch this movie, or I'll let you go on the iPad, or I'll let you look at this screen. And so okay, now they're gonna. I'm gonna constrain their behavior because I'm using the screen time as a carrot. Or, hey, you were not good today, and so you're no screen time for you. You know, so you have no screen time this weekend, and so you're using that as a stick now. And again, we're using the screen to control behavior. And the reason why that's effective, and the reason why many parents use that, is because it works. Because the screen is like an idol for our children. They love the screen. And so if you can take something that they love, like screen time, then you can use that to manipulate them and control their behavior. But it's a short-term gain for a long-term loss. Because what you're doing if you do that, if you use screen time as a carrot or a stick, all you're doing is cultivating a heart that just loves that idol. And then soon there'll be a time when you can't use it as a carrot or stick because now they have control of it. So now they have their idol. Now they can just indulge themselves as much as they wish. And so you never actually checked the idol in their heart, but rather you used it and took advantage of it in order to try to control their behavior. And I've seen this time and again where, for instance, you know, a parent will use screen time or a sense of reward or punishment for screen time. Or they'll say, okay, well you can have this device, but you can only play it 30 minutes a day. And so it's almost like you have a dog on a leash, and it's on a very short leash, and you think, if I just keep this dog on this short leash, it'll be okay. They won't get into too much trouble. But then that 30 minutes a day, because they're persistent whining or crying, or whatever it might be, it's like, okay, well maybe you can do it an hour a day, or maybe you can do this other thing. So you get the leash a little bit longer, but you actually haven't trained the dog. And so parents, as children can grow up, we can continue to extend that leash. Okay, yes, you can have that. Oh, yes, you can do that. Yes, you can have one of those accounts. But the direction of our children is still away from us, still away from using technology responsibly. So we just keep giving them more and more leash until we find out, okay, there's a huge problem here. You know, my child is out of control. Well, it's because we've discipled them like a dog on a leash and never actually sought to address them and say, I need to remove the leash, not just keep extending the leash. And so be careful of using screen time as a reward or penalty. Be careful of how you manage, like even caps on time. Okay, half hour a day or an hour a day. Just be careful of what that might be communicating and whether you're actually addressing any idolatry or imbalance in the heart or the lives of our children. Okay, so be cautious of that. And another area that we need to be thinking of, a positive area in particular, is that we must regard technology as a blessing, but a blessing when we're using it as God's stewards in this world to be creative and be productive. You know, when you think about when God placed Adam in the garden, he said, you join Adam and Eve together, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and then to subdue the earth. You know, take this garden that God had planted a garden, put Adam in the midst of it, now cultivate this, and then spread this cultivation. This order and organization that reflects God's truth and beauty and goodness, reflect this across the entire globe. And so creativity, productivity, these are blessings that God has given to us. This is part of our cultural mandate, part of the mandate that God gave to Adam and Eve that we still share in today. Now, technology and the internet and devices can be used for that. And so we must make sure that as we instill this into our children, that we want them to be creators rather than consumers. We want them to be productive rather than sideline and squander all their time by just being amused. Okay, so we want to be careful of using our technology just for amusement. You know, if you're not familiar with the word amusement, you know, has the A in front of it, and then muse. Muse means thinking, pondering, and so the A means actually not musing, not thinking. And so amusement was entertainment that makes you not think. You know, you just want to be a vegetable on the couch. You know, you just want to be comatose like this. I don't want to think about anything. I'm just gonna take in. Now that's not a very Christian attitude. Yes, we need to rest, but we need to make sure that we are stewards of the gifts that God has given to us. And so we should be using our devices and technology for creativity and productivity. And so we need to teach that to our children. One way in which we've done that as a household is, you know, children love video games, and especially boys love video games, and so it's been a custom in our house, not perfectly kept, but this is our goal, and for the most part, it's achieved this way, that if our children want to play a video game, they need to make it, and then they find out that they actually have more enjoyment making and creating the game than they do playing with it. And so then it brings in other skills. And so to play a video game, you know, people say, well, it's advantageous because your mind is going, you know, your fingers, hand-eye coordination, and, you know, there's some aspects of that. But creating a video game, then you're bringing in math skills, you're bringing in physics skills, you're bringing in logic and programming, you're debugging, you're bringing in networking and finding out how it all works under the hood. Okay, it's like driving a car, and we take advantage of driving a car, and they're great. But to be someone who actually knows how to build a car and take it apart and put it back together, like, wow, that's so much more incredible than being able just to drive it. And so it's important that our children can understand and be productive and creative with technology rather than just being an end user of it. Okay, and when you do that, you recognize that tools take time to master. And so, if you take someone like, for instance, a young girl, and you want to show her, you know, some skills in the kitchen, you don't bring her on the first day in the first lesson and say, okay, well, here's the mandolin slicer, you know, and here's this big knife. And it's like, well, no, that's let's save that until there's some other skills before you start using something that's so dangerous. And the same is true for technology. You know, sometimes we just, well, here you go, 13-year-old, here's your phone with your internet and everything on. It's like, whoa, like that's, you're giving them something that is so boundless in terms of the potential. And so start small when it comes to teaching creativity and productivity by using devices and technology. And then they can grow up and learning proper usage by having the responsibility then to be able to take something as big as a smartphone today and know how to use that responsibly. And so it should come incrementally, focus on creativity, focus on productivity, using the device as a tool. Okay? And it's important in this regard that parents model those good habits. Okay? So if mom and dad just use the devices and internet and technology just as an amusement device, well, then no matter what you say to your children, they're going to use it the same way. If your conversations with your children are derailed because your phone buzzes or beeps, well, just know that when they get older and when you want to talk to them and their phone buzzes or beeps, they're also not going to pay attention to you. That's just, we're just modeling those things to our children, and it will be reflected back in their life as they grow older. And so we ought to be using technology in wise ways. We ought to be using it for creativity and productivity, and not just as an amusement device. And so we need to model that and demonstrate that to our children. Okay? So those are some positive remarks about how to properly use and shepherd our children through technology. The last one I want to mention is how to now practically take some of these lessons and then analyze your own home, okay? And even using other technology to help you in this step, okay? So what you should do is just take an accounting of all the devices that you have in your home. And any device that can connect to the internet. Okay, so if you do that, you probably find that you have a lot more devices in your home than you think you do. You might think, well, I just have a computer, I just have a phone. But when you start adding it all up and writing it down, all the different devices that you have that can connect to the internet, some people have found more than 20 things in their home can connect to the internet. Phones, tablets, computers, game consoles, e-readers, iPods, you know, even the thermostat. Everything kind of connects to the internet today. So just take an accounting of everything you have in your house. And these are now the technological devices that it is incumbent upon you to manage and to steward and to seek to shepherd your household and family through. Okay? So first, identify potential devices to manage. The second thing you'll want to consider is, on these devices that you have, is do you have any kind of filter? Is there anything that is there to act as some kind of even rudimentary way to block a bad content? You know, many people don't know that, like, even on Google, you can turn on safe search, or on YouTube, you can turn it on restricted mode where certain videos are not shown. There's different filters that are out there. There's also something called OpenDNS, and this might be getting too technical, but if you were to, for instance, type in a website in your browser, well, that name needs to get converted to a machine address that the machine understands. Okay, so this domain name lookup happens, and there are certain you typically, your internet service provider has this lookup, so it says, okay, if you're looking for Facebook, this is the address, the IP address that name resolves to. That's the address your computer needs to go to. But there's some, like, it's called OpenDNS, where you can configure your internet to use. And so if there's any website name that they deem as is a bad website, it's on their blacklist, well, then it won't resolve. You won't be able to go there. And so by just setting your modem, your router at home to use OpenDNS, immediately you now filter every single device in your household from being able to resolve any website they deem as bad or not good. And so that's one way in which you can filter. There's different parental settings on your internet device, on your router, whether you get TELUS or Shaw or whoever you get your internet from. There will be settings on your router. Some of them have child safety modes or, you know, off at a certain time. And so be aware of some of these filtering things. Even on your devices, like on your phone, you can set up filters. You can set up time limits on certain kinds of websites or contents. And this is all available as options on your phone or on your computer. And so you must consider the devices that you have and then consider any filtering that provides a base level of protection for the devices in your home. Okay? That's something that we can do. Third thing you can also do besides filtering is manage. I mentioned the same things like your settings on your internet device, your router or your modem. Your device-specific settings have different ways to manage. So it's not necessarily filtering content, but it's managing maybe time usage. One thing that we've used on our devices for our children on the iPad or iPhone is called guided access mode. And so if you're not familiar with guided access mode, you know, there's sometimes when I'm out and a parent has given a device to their child and then their child switches out of that application and goes somewhere else. Oh, don't go there, don't click on that. And so the parent goes and fixes it again and sets it back again. And so there's actually a mode on the iPad and iPhone called guided access mode where essentially it locks whatever you want to lock. So if your children are looking at something on there or using some kind of app on there, you can turn it off so they can't press the home button, they can't test the volume keys, they can't switch apps. You can make it so they can't even touch a screen. It's just they just can look at it. And so there are these tools that are available to you to help manage some of these devices. And of course, there's always the manual option. You can unplug your internet. I know one dad who a certain time of night would go downstairs and just unplug the internet, and that would fix things in the home about their children who knew more than him about the internet, but that would turn it off and make them get off their devices. So there are ways that we can filter and manage some of the technology that we have in our home. And the fourth way that I'll mention in terms of very practical, taking some of our technology, identify your devices, investigate any filtering, talk about management, and then fourthly is monitoring. Monitoring is like back to the conversation. So it's one thing to just try to think, okay, I need to set up these filters, need to install this software, and then we're good. Now, there must be a follow-up. There must be some monitoring that takes place. You must periodically just, you know, if your child's on their on a computer or a device, you just, excuse me, move over, you know, look at browser history and just say what's going on here? What have you been doing? Being aware of, for instance, you know, my older boys are on a Google chat group with a few of their friends, but I'm on that chat group as well. So whatever they say, dad sees at the same time. Again, remember, privacy is not a need. And so dad can see their messages and what they're talking about. And so there's monitoring that's taking place to know how devices are being used and then talking about that. Okay? And so it's important that we do that, especially when our children are younger. You know, even if they wanted to look up something on the internet, oh, mom and dad are going to sit beside you. We're going to do that. You know, if you try to, your kids are writing an essay and they want to go to Google Images and look for an image like that. Yikes! You know, what are they going to find? It's just okay. You want to look for something for your essay? Okay, mom and dad will sit next to you, and we're going to do that. That we're there and we're monitoring how they're using their computer or device. Okay, and then conversations can come up from that. Okay, there are software out there like Covenant Eyes, X-ray Watch. I'm not sure if that's still around, but there's other software out there that you can install to try to help do this filtering and managing and monitoring all together. But any technological solution always has a workaround. There's always, you know, no matter how smart someone is in developing some kind of management software, there's always someone smarter who can go around it. And so, and if someone's persistent, they can find a way around it. So don't rely on these things. Use them if they're needful to you. But just installing Covenant Eyes, for instance, is not going to say, okay, there we go. My job as a parent is done. The internet is now protected, and we can use technology however we wish. No, it still requires us to personally manage what's happening in the home. Okay, so remember, our technology is a tool for us, but communication, regular parenting, using our words, is key to managing our technology. All right, so I want to take some time for any questions or comments or feedback that you may have. Yes, Calvin? Good point. Yeah, so if you want help on this filtering or managing and use some technology, find someone else who's a bit of a technophile, ask them to help you. But don't rely on that. Other questions or comments? Yes, Michelle. Yeah, no, it's a great point, especially, you know, adults. We can spend time with news or with all the stuff going on in the world. We have access to it at our fingertips that we wouldn't have had in a previous generation. And that amount of information can cause issues, can cause anxiety issues. Especially see that among women. They have a heart to care, and then you just find out there's 1,000 different cares, and you actually can't actually do anything about them, and so it just causes a lot of anxiety, depression, you know, a variety of problems with that. It could also, on the other hand, cause us to be cold and callous. We're used to bad news all the time. Just you know, it's another thing. It's almost like you need even more shocking bad news to arouse any kind of reaction within us. So it's important that we have... We're considering a healthy use of all the information that bombards us. And if it's causing a problem, I do agree. Cut it off. Go for a technology fast. You know, take a month, take 3 months away from it, and you'll find you know, giving your brain time to heal from that kind of information. Yes, Laura? Yeah, that's a good question. So good questions. Let me tackle the first one. You mentioned about how to properly instill to our kids, you know, this is good content, that's not so good. Part of that's just going to be kids that age are not really going to understand, right? So there's going to be a lack of our ability to say, hey, that's not really a good show you should be watching. It's like we just don't show them that show, period. We know it's not good, and so we do not show it. You know, for our kids, like, I don't know if any of you have heard of Cocomelon. Cocomelon, yeah. I didn't hear this thing until we actually had someone come babysit our kids, and then they put Cocomelon on for the kids, and then we came back like, whoa, our kids are monsters. What would you just show them? And it was Cocomelon, and I looked up this Cocomelon show, and I guess these people behind it have figured out, you know, how the colors to use, how quickly to change scenes, the music, the things on the screen, so that even like a 4 or 6 month old will just stare at the screen for like hours. And they think, wow, this is such a good show. It's so educational. Like, my kid's just enraptured with it. It's like, no, they just figured out the child mind, and they're abusing that to keep them attentive to the screen. And so Cocomelon is like, it's like a form of drugs for kids, you know. So I do not recommend Cocomelon. But if I was to say, hey, you know, little Johnny, you shouldn't watch Cocomelon. You should really read a book. He's not going to have the ability to understand that. Cocomelon is just enrapturing to them. And so we just say, no Cocomelon. I'm going to read you a book instead. And then this, in what we read and what we set before our kids, that will develop their appetite for what is beautiful and good. So I think that's important. So whatever you watch on TV, whatever books you read, just read your kids and put in front of your kids the absolute best, and that will develop in them an appetite for it. Your second question had to do with, you know, being on your phone for good purposes, and how do the kids know the difference? Well, they're not going to know the difference unless you're communicating that to them. You know, but even if you're doing grocery shopping and on the phone, and there's stuff going on with the kids, that can still, you know, be put aside if there's something you need to deal with. If it's not something that's urgent or important, you can let them know. You know, mommy's, I'm doing the grocery shopping right now. Here, look, I'm picking this, and you can let them see that what you're doing. But there might be another, depending on what's going on. You know, if the household is all falling apart, it's probably not the best time to do groceries on your phone. So set that aside. Come back and do that later, another time. Yes, Justin. Yes. Good. So Justin asked a great question. So we can use devices or technology screens. We can use that as a carrot and a stick, reward, punishment, based on, to try to control behavior, right? So it's important that as parents we recognize behavior is the result of certain inputs being filtered through the heart. Okay? So you have inputs, and let's call those inputs circumstances. You have the outputs, you have behavior, and then in the middle, you have the heart, you know, the inner person. And so when we see poor behavior, you know, so there's screaming, there's tantruming going on, we know that's bad behavior, and typically in our laziness, in our hurry, we're like, here, let's just give them a screen and stop that. That will stop the behavior. But it hasn't addressed the heart issue. And so it's almost taking the behavior, this is bad behavior, and so let's change the circumstances. And so the device becomes the circumstance that we can use to manipulate the behavior. And it's almost like we're short-circuiting the heart, because we know the heart is hard to change. it requires conversation and time. So rather than just dealing with the behavior, we need to deal with, okay, what's the heart issue? Okay, for this current circumstance, what is that telling me? The circumstance and the behavior, as I can see those things. I can see the circumstance, I can see the behavior. And so what is that telling me as a parent about the heart? And then maybe it's because there's selfishness going on. Maybe it's just they're tired. You know, there could be many different things that we might discern what's going on inside of them. And then it's important for us to take the time and deal with that, rather than just manipulating the circumstance to try to get the right behavior. And usually that's a conversation. Sometimes if there's corrective discipline involved, well, that involves a conversation. It involves spanking if they're at the appropriate age for that. So there's biblical consequences for bad behavior. And we typically look over those because we think, well, they're too draconian, or they take too long. I don't have time for a conversation. I'm just going to use the device to do it. And so I think if we're just committed to say, no, I can't be lazy in my parenting, and that's a temptation for me, for everyone, to be lazy in our parenting. But then we have a short stewardship. So 18, 20 years are going to go by pretty quick. And if we don't take the time to shepherd their heart, we're actually going to help. We're not going to help them at all. In fact, we're going to cement some of those poor behaviors. And the older they get, the harder it is then to address those behaviors. And so it's much better to try to deal with the issues of the heart when they're younger and as they're growing, developing, than waiting until you have a rebellious teenager. Now, what do I do? You know? So that is my encouragement. Put in the effort, work. Think about circumstance, behavior. Think about what tells you about the heart. And then once you discern some of the things that are going on in the heart, then what's the biblical truth that they need? You know, what's the biblical response? Is this require a spank? Is this require more of a conversation in terms of understanding what's going on? Does this require me to model them? You know, so say our kids are really selfish, they don't share. And so we might just say, okay, I just need to spank them because they're not sharing. But then have we actually taught them and trained them to share? Have we done that work so that they know what to do? So when we think about discipline, you have two forms of discipline. You have that corrective discipline. You know, there's some kind of penalty, whether that's a conversation or whether that's corporal punishment. There's some kind of penalty in that corrective discipline because where they're going is not good. So I need to correct you back on the path. But there's also the formative discipline. And those are the conversations and the modeling and the example that we're saying, this is the way you ought to go. And so we need both formative and corrective discipline to shepherd that heart so that whatever the circumstances are, we're seeing godly behavior come out the other side. Okay? It's hard. It's time consuming. But the shepherding a child's heart is good, especially at the younger age. And then Ted Tripp's brother, Paul Tripp, also has other books on parenting, that same kind of model. But there's Joel Beege has a good one on parenting. So there's several good resources out there about helping kids walk through those issues in the heart. Keener? Well, that's the easiest, right? So if you have something that the 16-year-old can't do, well, of course, 7-year-old can't do it. The challenge is when you have a 16-year-old who can do it, and you don't want the 7-year-old to do it. There is no Cocomelon in the house. No. You can try that. You come in with your phone with Cocomelon on. We'll see what happens. Yeah, so there is a strict ban, no Cocomelon in the house. no matter what age, even if you're 16, 18, that doesn't matter. But it is a challenge when you have younger kids, and our kids, our older kids do a good job reminding us of what they couldn't do when they were seven. You know, so it's like, Dad, Josh can't do that. We didn't do that when we were seven. So, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, let's be more consistent here. And so the older kids can help in that regard. But it is a challenge, and that's one thing we just have to parent through. And, you know, you'll get complaints from the younger children. Oh, I want to do that. It's like, no, I said no. You should not have a device. You do not need an iPad. Put down that phone. You're not old enough for that. Okay? And then what we typically do is to introduce kids to technology is first, we have some very, you know, rudimentary laptops, and they start doing like a typing course. Just learn how to properly type. And then there's a website called Khan Academy that has very simple programming skills. And so they can go on that. So again, it's helping the kids to properly type on a keyboard and then learn a bit of coding, you know, make graphics on the screen, things like that, writing some of their homework assignments on there.